Welcome, y'all! That's right. This is the Pre-Game Engineer Tailgate Mayor Racing Podcast, episode number 128. It's Thursday, January 11th, 2018. I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace. I'm joined in the PTM Podcast Studio with Pre-Game Engineer Andrew Shore. What's happening, man?
Man, you know what? I've never been more excited for how wide range this guest is going to be tonight. I think people are going to be pretty, especially all of our followers who are proud supporters of the United States military.
Absolutely. So before we get to that, the PETM podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. You go to patreon.com/PETM, join the What You Drinking Club for as little as $1 a month and get that free koozie. Best part is every cent in 2018 we're donating to sponsoring drivers. So join the PETM posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. I've already messed up that twice, so let's see how I do here. This week's show is brought to you by our official sponsor at the $5 and up per month level. That's Catherine Gingston, Ashley Stang, Laura Henshaw, Harry Bolzano, Mick Rose, Chad Sterling, Aaron Bearden, Robert Kaplinger, Tony Salt, Colby McClam, Eric Kepner, Ryan Kiefer, Mary Levesque, Patrick Cleary, Jeff Brown, and Brandon Crowd, y'all. Thank y'all for doing that. Holy cow, let's get rolling here. Thank you, Sydney Lett, for singing the
making
extended
making us sound
version.
Better.
yeah, making us sound better, and had to have her do the extended version there today. Today... we welcome on, Sherwin already said, somebody that we're real excited to have on here with the cross product of all the things that he's done and is doing. He is a Lieutenant Surface Warfare Officer with the U.S. Navy. He's a NASCAR K&N driver. He's a founder of the Red List Group, a collection of street drag racers in California. You can tell us a little bit more about that. You can find him on Twitter at Jesse_Iwuji. Welcome, Jesse Iwuji. Jesse, what's happening, man?
Hey, what's up? Yeah, so thank you so much for having me on the show, and I think it's going to be a pretty good one.
We are beyond thrilled to start this thing off. We do start the thing off the same way every time before we get into anything. Jesse, do you have a drink in your hand tonight? What you drinking on?
I don't have a drink in my hand right now because I have to tomorrow do something that I've been wanting to do for a very long time, and what I'm doing tomorrow is I'm actually taking my first laps, you know, in a race car at Daytona International Speedway.
Holy
cow.
So
I got to get ready for that. I'm testing and looking forward to racing at Daytona in February.
That's fantastic.
That is so cool.
Oh, man.
I thought I sniffed that out earlier in the week. I thought that might come out.
Might be happening. you know, that just gave me goosebumps thinking about first time doing something like that. Yeah, that's super cool. Sherwin, what are we drinking on today?
Well, besides always drinking your Jim Beam, I like to keep it topical with the beer. All our listeners know that. The Falcons are playing in Philadelphia this weekend on Saturday afternoon. So, got a beer from Pennsylvania made by Victory called the Dirt Wolf Double IPA.
There it is.
And then a little bit later, after Jesse moves on to his whatever the rest of his activities are for the evening, we've got a Jameson Caskmate Irish whiskey that's been finished in an IPA beer barrel. So that's,
holy mackerel. So that's,
holy cow, that's a mouthful.
That's going to be an ordeal. Anyway.
Well, hey, one thing, though, is, you know, for everybody out there, if they are thirsty and they just want to sip on some water, don't forget to drink on some Perfect Hydration water, which you can get at Costco. It's 9.5 pH alkaline water. Awesome stuff. Keeps you hydrated. And also, they just happen to be one of my sponsors.
Excellent sponsor plug.
I love it. Now, what's
water is the most common beverage on the show.
That's true.
For our guests, but not that water, which they need to go to Costco and get for sure.
9.5 pH. I mean, yeah. That's getting up there, too.
Yeah. That's so. A little basic.
they rock it. And, you know, with their whole graphic scheme that we have for the race car, it's been pretty cool. And I think it's been really helpful in really promoting the product. A lot of people are now starting to know about it. It's pretty new. We've been out just for a little bit, but definitely gaining some traction, getting to more stores, and we're trying to get them into more stores over the next few years.
That's fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah, very cool.
I know several of our listeners are Costco frequenters.
yeah. So, Jesse, one of the things that we talked about kind of in the pre-show a little bit, I don't even know where to start on this because your Twitter picture is – three things that are just, I mean, it's badass is what it is. Somebody in the, yeah, hats off to what you're doing there. And said, like, three things that, like, everybody respects or wants to be a part of or something. You've got yourself in a Navy uniform. Folks on YouTube, you can see this. A Navy football uniform played for Navy football, and then an actual naval officer uniform, and then a driver uniform. And so it's like, wow, the three different things that totally want to be a part of, and that's so cool. So with that, I don't even know where to start. So why don't you kick us off with, like, your race program and what you're up to, you know, racing, and then let's just jump in the rest of it, man.
Yeah. So real quick on my story for those who don't know. So, you know, originally I'm from Dallas, Texas, grew up in Texas my whole life. And then through high school, I played football, middle school played football, high school football, got recruited to play college football out of high school at the Naval Academy. And at that point, that was the best offer that I had for college football as far as education and football. I did get some offers from other schools, but for this one, I was going to go play Division 1A football for a great team that has a winning record and also get a great education from a great institution. And then when you graduate, you automatically have a career, and that career is, you know, serving the country in the United States Navy. So I was like, it's all wins right there. I know it's going to be tough, but I'm going to make it happen. So I went to Naval Academy, played college football there, also ran track, graduated in 2010, and got commissioned to be an officer in Navy as a surface warfare officer. And for those who don't know, surface warfare is basically the folks who are on the ships. So we operate the ships, we drive them, we take them to places, we do things, we come back, and we make sure that we're all free at home here in the U.S. and we come back from deployment. So great things. We're on a lot of different kind of ships. I was on an amphib and also a minesweeper. And wow. Then after my second deployment to the Arabian Gulf, I came back from my second deployment at the end of 2014, and then in the beginning of 2015 is when I began my racing career. I still did it while I was active duty, but I was only on shore duty at that point. I wasn't on sea duty anymore, so I had more free time, especially on the weekends, to go race. So I started late model racing in early 2015, moved up to the NASCAR K&N Pro Series West after that in 2016, finished top 10 in points for my rookie year in 2016. 2017, last year, was my second season. Finished 14th in points. Ran all the races both seasons. And now going into this year, the plans are getting even bigger. I haven't really fully announced them yet. But the first step is this weekend, testing at Daytona.
What an anthology, and he's only 30 years old.
Right? Hats off to you, man. And so first, cool. First and foremost, thank you for your service. And absolutely. Thank you for what you're doing. You know, one thing you said right there that, you know, we're in the NASCAR offseason, so me and Sherwin are just kind of, we just BS on this show for right now. We have nothing to talk about. So the fact that people listen means that they care what the folks like you have to say, because they certainly, I don't know why anybody would care what I have to say.
They legit so care.
You said in there amphibious stuff. Tell me about that a little bit. That sounds really cool. I get pictures of these, like, these... what do you call it? I mean, what are they called? The airboats that, like, come up to the shore and stuff.
Yeah,
there's waves going everywhere, and
yeah,
people are getting wet.
That's what we did. So the ship I was on was the USS Comstock. That was my second ship. It was about 600 plus feet long. We had Navy and Marines on board, and then we carried equipment for the Marines to do ship to shore type operations. So we had those basically big hovercraft. Type vehicles that, like, basically hover right over the water and, head to land. We have other things, other equipment, vehicles that can go from the ship to the shore that carry Marines and their equipment. And basically, you know, our job as ship drivers was to position the ship in the proper way so that we could level it down, basically sink the ship a little bit so that these vehicles would come out of the back of the tailgate. And then once they do, we come back up. And then they go do their thing. Once they're done, they come back to us. We get them back into our well deck, and then we boom, go off to the next place.
Man,
that's so cool. I got this picture in my mind. It's probably larger than life, but that's because what I'm hearing sounds larger than
600
life.
Feet. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's a big, to have big a hovercraft. Can you walk us through the ship a little bit? Like, what it, you know, do people sleep on this thing, or is it mostly just tactical, or what's the story?
Yeah, so the ship, the USS Comstock is the big LSD ship. But that's the one that's 600 feet long. Inside of it, at the back of it, the ship is like a truck. Imagine a truck with a bed in the back. You know, you have all this open space in the bed. You have the you had a forward cab. The forward cab is where, you know, everybody, all 400 to 800 people who are on their SIP are basically living at and operating and all that stuff. That's where we all at most of the time. And then you have the rest of the ship, which is the bed, and that's called the well deck. In the well deck area, that area is like 400 plus feet long and open, just open area inside the ship. And at the back of it, a tailgate. That tailgate lowers down into the water. Then we have special equipment on the ship that allows us to sink the back of the ship, basically sink that tailgate into the water to where we're filled up the whole well deck with water, which allows the equipment that is in the well deck to now be floating in water and then zoom out and go out to shore.
So you can't tell me rednecks don't have a purpose in this world when one of our Navy boats has a truck bed
and a tailgate. I love it. Man, that's
So there was a question in the feed I want to get to, because that's one of the reasons why these guys pay attention on the YouTube. But I think it's a fellow Dallas-ite. I'm not sure. What is that? What high school did you go to in Dallas?
Yeah, so I played high school football at Hebron High School, which is in Carrollton, Texas.
Carrollton.
I lived in Carrollton pretty much the majority of my life.
Cool. All right.
That's awesome. So after high school, you went to the Naval Academy and played football there. Of course, Sherwin and I talked with you a little bit in the pre-show that we have some similar ties there, in that Coach Paul Johnson, who was with Navy at that time and now is, of course, at Georgia Tech. Tell us a little bit. Now it's just a podcast for me and Sherwin, because probably nobody else cares about this.
Right.
But,
and they'll start yelling at us in a minute, but that's fine, because this is one of the main reasons why we wanted to have you on.
You got to tell
us. You played for Paul for the fall of 05 and then 06 and 07?
No, I played for him 2006 and 2007 season. 2005 season, I was at the Naval Academy Prep School, which is in Rhode Island, and I was just basically, doing that Naval Academy Prep School thing for a year before I went to be a freshman at the academy. So, I played for him 06, 07 season, then he left, and then Coach Nia Masalolo took over, and he's done a pretty phenomenal job since.
Absolutely.
Totally agree.
You got to tell us a little bit about playing under Paul Johnson and what it's like.
You may have to bleep some cuss words.
Oh, man. Coach Johnson, he's pretty he's a crazy coach. He's a crazy coach. A good one. He's good, though. But he sparks the fear in you, for sure. I mean, you did not want him yelling at you.
We've seen the videos just playing or watching Georgia Tech games, and we go to all the home games, and I mean him grabbing somebody with both hands and get two fists of a face mask and pulling them into his face to yell at him, and you go, man, he's passionate. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, he's very, very passionate. Very.
Oh man, so I can't imagine there. And what position did you play? I don't know if we even asked.
So I played safety when I was in college. I came in as a corner. I was only a corner just for a little bit before they figured out that safety was going to be the best position for me, just because I had good speed. I was fairly strong and could hit. So why waste that at corner? So safety was my thing.
That sounds like the definition of a safety right there.
Sounds like the definition
of strong. Hit.
And somebody that Paul Johnson licks his chops wanting to have on his team, for sure. After Navy, suddenly racing. So tell us about that transition, how you got into racing. What happened? What sparked that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the crazy part of it is there's not even an after Navy. I'm still in the Navy.
Oh, I shouldn't say that.
That's the best part of it. But the thing is, so how the racing thing started, so I've always loved cars, always loved racing since I was a kid, but I never could race as a child because, my parents weren't rich like that, and, it wasn't a thing for us in Texas. Football was a thing. So, I did football, but I always had that little small passion for cars and racing. Once I graduated from the academy, I had bought a Dodge Challenger, and I started souping that up, started hopping it up with power, was making like about 1,000 horsepower at one point. Holy and God. I was doing a lot of drag racing on different drag strips, and the car was pretty crazy. And then I took it to an event called the Mojave Mile, ran that, did 200.9 miles per hour in it with my Challenger, which made me like the fourth person ever to be able to do that in a Generation 3 Hemi. So that was a pretty cool accomplishment. It got me into some magazines, got me a little bit of recognition on social media. And then I bought a Corvette later that year, which was 2013. And when I bought that Corvette, I started taking it to road course tracks to learn how to, you know, take corners at speed. I didn't want to be fast in a straight line. I wanted to be able to go around a corner. So I got the Corvette, started doing that, just local track days, like nothing big, no real competition. And then in January 2014, I made a decision. I was like, you know what? I really have a huge passion for cars. I really have a huge passion for racing. Why am I sitting here wasting all my wasting all my money just going and doing small events? If I'm going to be spending money on racing and spending my life, I want to take it to the highest level I can. I want to take it to the next level. I want to become a professional driver. So I just said it. I put it out there in the universe. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. And then at that point, I'm like, okay, now how do I do this? Because I'm not rich. I'm just in the Navy. My parents aren't rich. I'd have no sponsors, no financial help or anything. How am I going to make this happen? So I started small, and I did what a lot of people do. I started asking questions. I reached out. I went on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff and reached out to different professional drivers and sports cars and all that stuff. And I asked, maybe reached out to probably like 30, 40, 50 drivers. Maybe a few responded to me, and they're like, yeah, if you want to start racing, you should probably do this, do that, do this and that. That will help you. Some of them really didn't respond. Some of them didn't give me great answers. Some of them told me that, you know, if you don't have money, you can't do it. And I'm like, what the heck? So I was like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to make this happen. So I went to a car show in 2014 in March, and then met a guy there. And, I told him about the drag racing I was doing with the Challenger, and I told him about my Corvette. And, he's like, okay, that's cool. And then we split ways, and then I went to the porta potty to use the porta potty. He went there, too. He used it, came out. Right when he came out, he looked at me, so he saw me again. He was like, would you be interested in stock car racing?
Holy crap.
And at that point, that's what changed my entire course of life, and that's why I'm in NASCAR now, because I needed the P. I'm now racing in NASCAR. So it's pretty crazy, but that's how that started. So anyways, from there, I went and did a test with his team 2 months later. The test went well, and then after that, the team said, if you want to race with us, come back to us after – or come back to us the following year, because I had to go on deployment for 5 months. So I went on deployment. I came back. When I came back, I only had like $5,000, which was enough to do a late model race with that team, just one. And I was like, well, if I have enough money for one race, I'm going to just make it happen, and we'll see what goes from there. I did the one race, it went well. I was mid-packish pretty much the whole race, but I had a wreck in practice, but we were able to fix the car. But, I was mid-package, and after that, I was like, okay, well, that went all right, and I didn't have any more money. And then from there, I did a crowdfunding campaign, and I made enough money to get to the second race. And then after I made it to that race, I grabbed a credit card and then maxed that out to make it to the third race. And after that, I really had no more money. I'm like, well, now I have no money to race anymore. My career might be done. And then next thing you know, I get a call from someone. He's like, I want to connect you to a friend. He connects me to the friend who has a conversation with me on the phone, and then we meet up for lunch, and then the next conversation, my rest of my season got sponsored.
Holy cow.
It was crazy because he loved my story. He loved that I was in the Navy. He loved that I'm trying to, trailblaze, and we made that happen. All the while, throughout that whole year, early that year, I had started a small business called the Red List Group, and I put on drag racing events in Southern California at Gamoso Raceway in Bakersfield. And I was starting to – the events were taking off. They were doing really well. We were getting a lot of people to come, and basically the profit I was making from that was able to stack up enough so that in 2016 I held more events too again, and all the profit we made from the year before and that year – was able to fund my entire 2016 season. So I went the entrepreneur route in 2016 to fund my whole racing season. Going to 2017, I used the entrepreneur route again to fund half of the season before I landed a big sponsor with Perfect Hydration. We partnered up, thanks to the help of my new car owner, Sean Berryman, who's an ex-NFL player. He connected those dots to make that happen, and now that the rest of that season got sponsored. So that's kind of the crazy route to make it happen, and that's basically how a regular Joe Schmo grinds his butt off so that he can get to his goals and dreams when he doesn't have what's necessary at first.
Man, I'm going to throw my hat, or I need to flip this desk over. Holy cow. That's got to be the best intro to NASCAR story. I think last time I was in a porta potty, Sherwin threw a rock at it and it hit it. And
it was very loud.
If you hadn't, if you hadn't been in a porta potty and had somebody throw a rock at it, I'm not saying I recommend it, but I'm saying that's an ordeal right there. And here's Jesse getting a ride. I've never got a ride. I got a rock thrown at me. You know what I mean? Like, other people saying the same thing. Why can't I get that when I go to pee? That's fantastic, man. How cool.
yeah, I mean, so how did you get connected?
Yeah, it's been a crazy one.
How'd you get connected with Sean Merriman?
Yeah, so at the end, the whole thing is, you know, during this whole time from start to finish, I learned that networking was big. You have to network in this sport, and really in anything you do in life, you have to network. You got to connect the dots with people. So all through 2015, all through 2014, all through 2016, I was constantly trying to network, going to events, going places that, you know, I might really have no business being, but I figured there's going to be people there who are like-minded with me who want to get somewhere in life. So I was invited to some fashion show, and I was like, well, I'm not a fashion person, but I figured there's going to be somebody there who's going to know people for something. I don't know. I'll just find a way. So I go there, you know, and Sean Merriman happens to be there. I'm like, oh, cool. I know that guy. He played football. He's an NFL, 3-time Pro Bowler. The guy was like a rock star. So I run up to him, like, hey, dude, like, my name's Jesse, and, you know, I'm in the Navy, and I race in NASCAR, and me and you need to connect. You know, and then he was like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, I raced in NASCAR. He's like, well, you're black, you know? And I'm like, yeah. So he didn't really say it like that, but I know that's what he's thinking. So, you know, yeah, I'm like, yeah, I raced in NASCAR. So we connected, and we decided that the best route to go for us to make something happen and really take off with this was to make him my car owner for the K&N series. So what we did was we made him my car owner in the K&N series, and through that, that was his foot into the door to NASCAR. He was able to leverage that to, you know, help my sponsors that we had on the team to connect more dots to get more sponsors. We were able to utilize that to get NASCAR into different places that it maybe not have been before. You know, I know for the Dover race, he was able to bring out like 100 inner city kids from that area in near like Maryland or something like that. He was able to bring out like 100 inner city kids to the track so they can have their first NASCAR experience. So different things like that to really push the diversity initiative and really get NASCAR out there to more people that normally would have never seen it before. But through us, you know, we're able to really get that kind of promotion for NASCAR and really help push that so we can get more fans into the sport. You know, NASCAR has a ton of fans right now, but there could be so much more if we can just get, you know, the different demographics in there that normally wouldn't watch it.
Man, I don't know what to say there. And right on the money with that, and a good segue into one of the questions that we had. We just had somebody on Twitter, Laura, says, we need to get Jesse in National Touring Series NASCAR stat. And Antonio Williams at the Bo Hindle sent in a question about that. Have you begun considerations for what next steps looks like? Is it, you know, Truck Series, Xfinity Series, or anything beyond?
Yeah, definitely. I'm always thinking about that. It's always on my mind, and that's definitely the route that I want to go. You know, I'm racing K&N right now. The next step is to jump up into a truck and race trucks. The next step after that is to jump up to Xfinity, and then after that, Cup. So that's my goal. The end goal is to be racing in Cup. And then, you know, eventually win a championship in a Cup Series. That's the end goal. I'm going to find a way to make it happen. I don't come from a racing background. My family didn't race. We that's just not what we did, but it doesn't matter. Like, if you want something and you want to go get it, you can. All you got to do is just constant belief in yourself, constant action, constant faith, and just be consistent with all of it, grinding every single day. you know, it, when you put it all together, one day you stand up and look, and you're like, wow, I got here.
Man. You know, Sherwin, it makes me ask the question, Rusty, what did you do today? Well, I didn't do jack.
Nothing compared
here's
to
Jesse.
That.
Holy cow. Jesse, here's a question, maybe a fun one for you. Thinking about racing and the Navy or racing and being in the armed forces, what are some of the similarities or what are some of the things that one prepares you for the other that you've found to be helpful as you're you know, taking this on?
Yeah, so with racing in the military, they have a lot of different similarities. You know, both of them are they're both team sports, team type activities where it's not one person runs the whole show. Everybody has their part, and it has to happen. On a race team, the driver has to do their part so that they're driving the right line. They're doing everything that the team wants them to do with the vehicle so they can be the fastest. The crew chief is making the right calls on the setup. The car chief is actually making sure all the guys are doing the right things on each part of the car. For the pit crews, you know, during a pit stop, you know, the tire changer, rear tire changer is doing his particular job. The guy, the jack man is jacking it up just at the right time. Everybody's doing their one particular job, but they have to do their one particular job and focus on their one particular job to do that perfect. And if everyone does their part perfect and the whole thing comes together, there has to be good communication. That's how it all comes together. It's just like on the ship, too. In the military, the first thing that happens, anytime something goes wrong, the first thing they tell us is establish comms. Establish comms means establish communication. So start communicating. People need to have open lines of communication throughout the ship so that everyone knows what's going on. People need to get to their certain positions wherever on the ship to make sure that we're manning the right stations and everyone's doing their particular job so that we can correct whatever's going on or fight against whatever's going on. It's all the same, you know, whether it's racing or the military, it's a team type activity. Everybody has their one part. Everyone has to do their one part perfect so the whole thing comes together.
Man, what a great answer in terms of those parallels. I don't know what to say, man. I'm freaking out right here, and I know we've kept you for way longer than you said you had, so I appreciate that, and that's selfish on our part. But
it's all good.
Man, we've got to have you on again at some point. You know, you're going to be a star driver here shortly, and we'll be the little guys, so be sure to remember all, you know, all of us back here. But tell me, here's my last question for you. Where can I buy a hat or T-shirt or something or sticker or something? I got to have something with Jesse Iwuji on it.
yeah, for sure. So if you head to PatriotMotorsportsGroup.com, just go on there, and you'll see the merchandise tab. You click that, and you'll see that stuff. So if you go to PatriotMotorsportsGroup.com, you'll see it all there. There's just a bunch of shirts. I think there might be a hat in there, too. I can't remember.
I see but, it. Yeah, me and Sherwin both, like, immediately started hitting the...
Yeah. You can,
I love it. Oh, those are cool shirts, too. Those are like the whatever we call those shirts. The
dry fit?
Yeah, the dry fit kind of stuff.
That's
and
a
the,
brand, but I guess
hat. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The polyester wicking athletic shirt.
Fantastic. Whatever. And $20, y'all. That's a steal for a racing shirt. I'm going to get me one now. Well, right after this, I'm bookmarking this, and then I'm getting me a shirt. That is, man, that's fantastic. I absolutely love it. Hey, why don't you close the close it out for us? I know we got to let you go. Tell folks where they can find you, what you're up to next, and you know when the next time you're going to be on the PETM podcast is.
Yeah, for sure. So you know where people can find me. They can go on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. If you really just type in my name, they'll see me pop up. So you can just type in Jesse Iwuji, which is J-E-S-S-E. And then last name is I-W-U-J-I. If you type that in on pretty much all the different social networks, you'll see me pop up. I don't go by any other, like, fake aliases or whatever. My name is what my name is. So if you just type it on any social network, you'll see me on there. The only thing is on Facebook, if you look for me, just go to my Facebook racing page and not my personal page. If you go to my personal page, I'm almost about to run out of friends on there, like, as in, like, I'm at that 5,000 limit or close to it, and I have to keep, like, a few open for business contacts. So just don't friend me, because I can't accept it. I got, like, 400 or 500 friend requests sitting there. I'm like, I can't accept all y'all. Go to my racing page. If you message me on there or something, I will see it, and I will respond back. And that's the thing. On social media, anytime you send me a message, I respond back. So whether it's super, super quick or within a day, I respond back to pretty much everybody. On comments, if you comment on something, if it's something new, I can respond back if it's a question. If you comment on something 100 years old, I probably won't see it. But, yeah, but if you go on social media, you find me on there, I'm very open. I can talk to you and help you out if you need any help in life on anything. I will be back on this podcast, shoot, whenever. It's fun. It's a good time. Y'all are awesome. And another thing, too, is what I'm up to this year. So, obviously, I'll be racing. First step is this weekend, testing at Daytona. And then in February, I'm going to be racing at Daytona. I haven't fully announced my full year schedule yet, waiting on a few little sponsor stuff to finish up so that I can figure out everything. But we'll be racing a lot this year. It should be fun and should be, you know, moving up and doing some big things. But the last thing I want to leave everybody with is, for all those out there who have big goals, big dreams or whatever, I can personally tell you that they are possible no matter what. I'm no one special. I'm just a regular person who just had a big dream and was like, I'm just going to go do it. And I did. And it does require a few things. It just doesn't happen. First step is announcing it to the world. Just put it out there in the air. You don't got to put it on Facebook, but you can just stand up and just yell out loud that this is my goal and this is what I'm going to do no matter what. Before I die, I'm doing this. The next step after that is to fully, insanely believe in yourself, like to no end. Like, even though nobody else believes in you, you have to believe it's going to happen no matter what. Every single day you see yourself doing it. You have to have that vision. You see yourself doing it. After you believe in yourself every single day, now comes the action. You have to act towards it every single day. So before you go to sleep, every single night of the week, not just Monday through Friday, like every night, Monday through Monday, every single day, 365 days of the year, 10 years in a row, 20 years, whatever it takes, every day you have to do it at least one thing that was aimed at trying to get you closer to your goal. Even if it's as simple as sending an email to a contact to have a meeting, or as simple as jumping on your racing simulator to get an hour of training in, or as simple as going to a trade show or going to some networking event or going and meeting with whoever or having a phone call with somebody, a mentor or something like that, whatever. Every single day you have to do at least one thing to chip away at that goal. After you do that every day, and you consistently do that every day, keep your head down, keep grinding, just stay faithful. And before you know it, you're going to start accomplishing some big things. And even when things look like they're going south, even when bad things happen, it's okay, because when a setback is a setup for a phenomenal comeback. And always remember, even when it starts getting dark, even at the darkest point of the night, the sun will rise. So just stick through it, you'll get through it, and you'll be surprised what you can do. Humans are so powerful. Our brains can do so much. You can control so much and make so many things happen. It's unreal. It's all in your head. Make it happen.
If your fist ain't pumping
right,
and your heart ain't beating right
through
now,
a brick wall.
Oh, man, I tell you what, that sounds like a speech right before a college football game, right before a big battle in the Navy, and right before a big race. PatriotMotorsportsGroup.com/merchandise. Me and Sherwin are looking at it right now. We're going to be buying some T-shirts and hats and everything else. Twitter at Jesse_Iwuji, and we'll be sure to tweet all that out so everybody gets it spelled right and everything. Jesse, thank you so much for being on here. This has been a blast, and I think you've got in the back pocket another, I'll say, what, 12 hours of stories at least, just to scratch the surface, that you can come on and give us some insight into. What do you say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have a lot more stuff. I mean, this journey has been pretty crazy. A lot of ups, a lot of downs, but it's just crazy how everything ends up working out, and it's just, you keep going. I mean, I just a guy just a few years ago who never raced in a race car before. It's literally March 2015, had never raced in a real race before. Right now, like, basically, you know, just about 3 years later, I'm about to drive at Daytona.
Unbelievable. We'll leave it at that, y'all. And Jesse, thank you so much for being on. And yeah, we'll catch you next time.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right, definitely. Y'all have a wonderful evening.
All right, you too.
Same
now.
Same to you. Good luck with the test.
Bye bye.
Thanks.
Oh, I might have hung up on him. Oops. That happens. Man, Sherwin.
I can personally attest that if you wanted to reach out to him, he will respond to you. That's the reason why we had him on the show tonight. I reached out to him probably early December once I discovered him on the Twitter. And he responded within 24 hours. We said, hey, things probably chill out a little bit after the holidays. Okay, cool. We'll reconnect. And then last week I was like, Thursday. You want to do it? And he's like, yep.
In? Man, I mean, where do we even go from here? That was, as far as people who have had
a... We talk about dumb you and I stuff because we can't touch what he just said.
I know, that's what I mean. I ain't done nothing like that before. He's right up there with Gordon Perkel. Like, Gordon Perkel is the old school cool, and Jesse Iwuji is like the new school cool. Like, yeah. How do you compare anything? Well, I watched football games. Oh, no, he played football. I follow, you know, what the Navy's and what Air Force, you know, all this cool stuff. Oh, no, he was in that. And yeah, I watch racing. Oh, yeah, he races. Like, well, crap.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Oh, man.
I did not even – so that was one of the great things about having guys like Jesse on the show is we get to hear things we didn't know we were going to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize that. I mean, he basically started his racing career at age 26.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, who does that nowadays? We've talked about that.
Nobody.
On the show.
Nobody.
Yeah.
No.
It's crazy. That's so cool. And the all that. And you know, we don't even bring it up, but the diversity aspect. I mean, we even talked about it before the show and told him, hey, man, you got to tell us more about, like, your family and your history and stuff because that's so cool. His parents are from Nigeria and moved here in the early 80s. He's first generation out of Dallas. And I mean, just unbelievable how cool that is, how neat it is, and how it's, like he said, bringing more people into the sport and a wider audience and everything. Man, I don't know what
to say. Well, I think it's great to bring somebody like Sean Merriman. So for those who aren't NFL fans, dude had a fantastic career with San Diego Chargers, now LA Chargers. No shots at San Diego there. I'm sure they're still quite pissed about that. But, I mean, just to get someone of that ilk that no one had ever known had any relationship with NASCAR, and it sounds like Jesse helped facilitate that relationship 100%. Everybody have a drink. Yeah, I don't even know. So we got to – it's like we got to deviate. It's like, okay, two roads diverge in a wood. Jesse's going to keep being a badass, and he's going to race his car at Daytona tomorrow and get that figured out. And we're going to go straight back to PETM goofing off.
Right.
Because we can't top that. We don't. There's no story we have that tops that story.
No. Laura Henschel asks, have either of you, Sherwin and Rusty, ever thought about joining the military? You know, I wish – I think everybody wishes that you had many other lives or whatever, but like if I had a second one, military would totally be the way that I would go. It's so intriguing to me, but the path that I chose, you know, was computer science at a technical institute after college or after high school, you know, doing that and then doing the career stuff now, but totally would be. I think that's the most intriguing thing to me that I didn't the most intriguing path that I didn't take is that. So what can I say? That is a number one on my list of if I had another life.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know that I ever even discussed this with my parents or not, but I strongly considered ROTC when coming into tech.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of not knowing, and then that whole, like I've said it before, I'll say it again. There's probably folks that are following now that haven't heard it before. Every male member of my parents' generation served in some capacity or another. There was only one career person that was my dad's middle brother. But my dad was in the Air Force. His middle brother was in the Air Force. His oldest brother was in the Marine Corps. My mom's two brothers were officers in the Navy and the Army. So, like, it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was big part of my coaching once we got into high school and figured out math was stuff we were good at is, you know what, engineering's pretty good field to pursue.
Man, y'all, I tell my wife this, and she doesn't believe me still, but I always say, man, math is like cheating. If you understand, like, they give you the answer, and then they say, just put this in a different way. Just, here's an answer. Just move numbers and letters around until it makes another answer that we're asking for. And that was, like, English, which she excels at and everything, and history and stuff. They make you memorize crap, and they make you say, what do you think about this? Math has never asked me what I think about something.
No, because it's mostly finite.
Right. It's just, don't think about it. Just move these things around. I can move stuff around. I can't think for myself. Anyway.
I hear you. I know what you mean.
Down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I
enjoy trying to identify symbolism.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What did he mean here? I don't know. Ask his ass.
Call his ass up. Been dead for 207 years. Well, then it didn't mean crap because he's probably wasted.
Should have wrote it down. Yeah, he's probably drinking mead.
Nathaniel
or something.
Hawthorne, sir.
Right. All right. Well, that brings us silly season stuff. We're already silly on this podcast now. So that
what's next on the play sheet? I don't even remember.
No, I mean, that was a perfect segue going from absolutely a guy who destroys us at life to us just being stupid.
True.
So now we get to be silly with the silly season. You wrote it down, Blake Koch out at
Blake Koch Cook is out at College Racing.
What did I say? I said coach. I'm a
That's
moron.
Okay. It happens. Ryan Truex in, so it's like, I don't know, somebody was like, isn't that a good thing? And I'm like, well, not for Blake Koch, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I like Ryan Truex. I bought one of his cool
Hattori
Race shirts.
Yeah.
Number 16 shirts.
You didn't buy one of them. You bought two of them.
Well, that's true. I didn't buy two.
I got one.
Rusty was the benefactor of that.
After washing that shirt, it has become a much more gun show shirt.
Oh, it's an undershirt.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It's soft.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Black. Black's good undershirt.
Black's a good color on people like me and you.
Right? I'll accept that. That's why I have so many black shirts, by the way.
That's why I'm wearing one right now.
Yeah, I mean, or like this, whatever you call this. I don't even know what this is called. Doesn't matter. All right, next up.
Yeah, whatever. Before Daytona, Chris Knight, you hitting the rumor mills here.
Oh, yeah, now I'm just gossip, straight up gossiping. Cause
it's, hey, off-season, we need to do this next year. Off-season, we're just going to gossip. Let's just do that.
Why
become
not?
Gossip queens. We'll like, put on some wigs with big hair and stuff and all that.
That'd be fun.
I'll give you a topic.
Topic? Chris Knight, I think all y'all know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Nicest guy in the media room. He's just put something out on Twitter, said, I'm 100% convinced there's another giant bombshell news story before we get to Daytona. And I don't know if he's just playing games or if he already kind of knows something. You know, some of these guys kind of know stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it would be. I would assume it couldn't be at the cup level, but who do you know? I mean, you never know.
There's no telling.
Yeah, I don't know
there's
either.
No telling. When did,
maybe it's going to be that Danica doesn't have a ride for the Daytona 500, even though she wanted to race it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've kind of heard that. I don't know if there's an official like back out.
Well, we heard
at this point or whatever.
Initially that Chip Ganassi might be involved in both 500 rides, and he's like, nope, not me.
Yeah, he's out. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, this was past the point that, like, Carl Edwards was December when he announced his retirement.
Yeah, we were about a week and a half past when he said something.
So bombshell. Oh, excuse me. Bombshell. Like that, maybe not.
What
happened,
is a bombshell? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
that's a good
Carl,
question.
Does he count as a bombshell, or is that like something far bigger than bombshell?
Okay, I was making sure you weren't going to say, like, that was smaller than bombshell. I'm like, dude, I'll hit you in the face.
I'm pushing that up into the stratosphere.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, bombshell was Junior retiring in March, I think.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The announcements that are SHR going to Ford, you know, that's
bombshelly.
That's bombshell sort of stuff because you just don't see it coming and whatnot.
Well,
it's pretty big.
That was the best kept secret in NASCAR.
Yeah. Yeah. Besides, because we Carl Edwards saying I'm out of here.
Well, that's it. Well, that's good. That's a good point. Good point. But we won't belabor that. But me having brought up Danica Patrick is a good segue into our next one. So just out in the social media space, we're doing a podcast right now. We both consume any number of podcasts on different topics, be it comedy or trying to learn something about the industry that we're in, or just anything that we're interested in, or things that are interesting to me. To me, I listen to almost every Joe Rogan Experience podcast because I either laugh my butt off or I learn some really neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Danica Patrick is slated to be a guest on the Joe Rogan Experience, but the date is not yet scheduled.
That's going to be a bombshell.
And that's going to be, I mean, if she does it the right way, that's 3 hours of Joe figuring out new ways to break down your walls and get you to say things you might not have would otherwise.
I've tried to, he's an inspiration for podcasters. Like the way that he, like, if I can do it on YouTube here, like he just sort of sits back and he's like, well, he's also high as,
depending on who his guest is.
Yeah.
He could be high,
but the way he just sits back, he's like, wait, think about this. How about this thing, you know? And I wish I could just sit here and just be that chill. And that, I don't know, like me and you talk when you know, we go downstairs after the podcast and we're
slightly less farting animated. Around.
Yeah. But I like being animated because this, you know, this is exciting. This is fun stuff. But his is so much more just sitting on the couch.
You've
got
to provide much more energy than in a 3 hour, because you know what you're signing up for when you listen to a 3 hour podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm gonna sit up now. That's
is it weird?
Okay, it's weird. Maybe I should just sit back.
All right, on the really light side of things, Jeff Gluck is at the Chili Bowl Nationals reporting, buys himself a program, starts flipping through it. And finds out that somebody in his Patreon support group has taken out a quarter page ad for jeffgluck.com and is just, you know, I'm sure for him that was one of those misty-eyed moments.
Misty-eyed moment, and you have to bust out laughing, and then you have to just, I can't imagine, man. That's so funny.
It's inspirational in very similar ways that Jesse is. Mm. Like, what Jeff's doing is, he's what we would call in the engineering industry a folk, F-O-A-K, first of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
Going out on his own the way he is and just hoping that enough people want to see what he's doing that they can support his progress.
And like the respect trolling that Dale Jr. did to him over the hat ordeal.
That was awesome. like you can tell Jeff or Jr. has a lot of respect for Jeff.
Yeah.
And vice versa, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, of course, vice versa. But the fact that Junior has that much respect for Jeff to troll him and to be like, yeah, I got the Jeff Gluck hat. And then had somebody make a Jeff Gluck hat to be like, oh, yeah, the Jeff Gluck hats are out there. Yeah, get you one. And they don't exist. He made it up and he paid somebody to make a hat.
Like 30 of them.
Yeah. And now same thing. Like somebody buys an ad for jeffgluck.com in the Chili Bowl program. I love it. You know what I love about this? Trolling Jeff Gluck in a fun way is probably the most fun that you can have, in the periphery of the sport right now.
I don't know that anybody else is more poised to accept being trolled that way than someone like Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I mean, y'all probably already know this because if you know what Jeff looks like, you know he's not old. He's 6 or 8 months older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means he's like the same age as Casey Kane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a guy that's had smartphones and the internet for most of his life. Could be on the edge of that, what, not millennials, but what they call us Xennials. The ones that are between Gen X and Gen Y. I firmly believe that Xennial is a good name for me because I exhibit some of those millennial traits, but on other ways I'm like, what the hell?
You know, to me, it's the technology side. Like, when I grew up, I had a record player. I recorded tapes off stuff. Like, Facebook didn't exist until I was out of college, you know?
That's a good point.
I don't think about being a millennial in that respect, although my birth date range is on the very, very early side of it, if you depending on which definition you look at.
Yeah, it depends on who you allow to describe what they think you are.
Yeah, exactly. So, and to your point, what you just said, I have exhibited behaviors You know, the older I get, I feel like the further I get away from exhibiting those behaviors, I'm like, those are, or the stereotypical ones are kind of toxic.
Well, the one that really lights a fire under my rear end is the is calling that I fit in this everybody gets a trophy generation. I'm like, no, that's, I mean, if you were on a team where everybody got a trophy, you knew exactly the reason why you were getting that trophy is because you had a nice coach, and he probably had a friend that works for a trophy company, and that's why you were getting the trophy. If it didn't say first, second, or third on it, you didn't win crap, and you knew that if you were a competitor.
That's the point. We knew. You know, I knew that I sucked at baseball. Like, I sucked ass at baseball, right? It was terrible. I quit, you know, my parents were disappointed that I'm leaving. You know, not that I was decent at basketball, and we actually won some good championships and stuff. I'm not saying it's because of me, but I was a starter, so I must have been okay. I sucked at baseball, you know. So I knew when I got a trophy for baseball, or if I got the game ball, it was a charity ball.
Oh, right. I mean, it's a lack of self-awareness. It's not a generational thing. It's just not knowing that you didn't win anything, dude.
Yeah, yeah. It's the entitlement thing. You know?
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's so, a different. That's a personality trait. That's not a when you were born thing.
Anyway, all right. Boy, wow. Off the deep end. 34 days to go, or 34.
Yeah, so
with
we said we
go.
Were going to like gossip and rant and just generally BS. But one more silly season update, and this isn't silly season update, but it fits in the category for now. Is the flip count at the Chili Bowl Nationals has a sponsor now. I don't know if they were sponsored last night or last year or not, but as of when I wrote these show notes, the Fastenal flip count was up to 34.
Holy crap.
And the listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the record is somewhere between 50 and 60. So between tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday, we're probably going to get pretty close to that number.
Yeah, yeah.
So far, nobody's been hurt.
Well, I mean, yeah, and hats off to the safety guys and the safety protocols and all that they have. But that's very you know what, that's a testament to how safe it is that somebody wants to sponsor it. You know,
well, that's a good point, and it's
like,
also
you're not going to be the engine fire sponsor. You're not going to be the. The head first into
that was funny.
Yeah, I'm not going to go any further than this.
Well, I think that's what all the rhetoric has been, is like there is an excitement level with the flip count, but there is also, like, on the other hand, like, clearly nobody wants anybody to get hurt in the name of a good flip,
right?
But the flipping itself is you know, helps you understand how much power and how small of a vehicle this is.
Uh-huh.
How short the wheelbase is, how narrow the chassis is, that you could just hit stuff and start tumbling.
Right, right. So and Chili Bowl, I mean, we didn't really even talk about it, but I mean, Kyle Larson killing it, and I don't know, everything. It's racing during the off season.
Well,
it scratches the itch.
Yeah. So one of the guys that I know pays a lot of attention to the open wheel racing, obviously Mick. And then Josh Hansen, uh-huh, also, and he sent a tweet that I would really appreciate what he said. He's like, why? Because Kyle Larson was given an interview saying that basically, I guess some NASCAR fans were put off in the respect that it sounded like he thought like his cup racing career is a hobby to his open wheel career, as opposed, mm-hmm, to the other way around. And it's okay for someone who's in that moment to have that reaction, because that it's his career, it's his life. And you know, somebody else kind of commented over the top of that. It was like, well, you know, somebody who actually really wants to be in NASCAR and race in a cup car shouldn't be, they should have a shot at that seat he's in. It's like, hold on. Dude won 5 races in the last 2 years. He won more races this year than any other Chevy driver. Like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
Whether he calls it a hobby or not, he's not blocking anybody. He's the man.
Right.
So let's calm the F down for a minute and just enjoy racing. And then, of course, Josh's comment was more on the side of, why do we have to pretend as race fans that NASCAR is the only thing going? Like, wouldn't it be better if we supported all kinds of different racing? I'm like, absolutely it would, because if NASCAR fans supported open wheel dirt racing and drag racing and road racing, they could probably pull some of those fans into NASCAR just by saying, hey, we're paying attention to you. How about you come pay attention to us?
In the time that you just had your little soapbox there, I have just ordered two shirts from PatriotMotorsportsGroup.com/merchandise.
Yes.
So we've got Jesse Iwuji shirts coming
yes.
to this house as soon as it happens. So that was that, y'all. Money where your mouth is the point of that.
And that's how I've been trying to operate. So I was talking with – who was I talking with? That was Brandon, you know, Lap Traffic.
Yeah.
We were talking – he's like, you know, one of the things that – so he said it on the podcast too, but is one of the things about the podcast is it's not caused any of us to lose sight of who we are first and foremost the fan of. Like, well, how we got into being a fan of this sport
mm-hmm.
and who we support. But the exposure that we've been able to get just by paying attention to all the things you have to pay attention to do any kind of reasonable podcast someone would listen to,
mm-hmm.
you end up finding stories here and stories there that you like, and you're like, I want to support this. I want to support that. I mean, I'm wearing a Wood Brothers hat, mostly because of Blaney, but I'm not going to throw it away next year when Paul Menard is the driver. I'm
right.
still going to wear my Wood right. Brothers hat.
Absolutely.
And Ryan Truex moving to
the Ryan Truex
Colic
shirt.
Racing. I'm not going to stop wearing my Go Ryan shirt mm-hmm. just because he's not in the 16 truck anymore. Because they'll be able to support two things at once, Hittori Racing and Ryan Truex.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the cool part is those things get you stories. You walk, if you're at a race, you know, we'll go to Darlington or something, and we'll be wearing Jesse Iwuji Racing. And that
somebody's going to go. Who's
that? What's
like,
the deal?
Well, we can dial up PETM 128, and you can listen yeah. to the first 35 minutes of this thing.
Yeah, by
and
the
you
way,
you will find out who Jesse Iwuji is.
No kidding. Speaking of PETM 128, dude, we haven't done it because I know we had limited time, even though we went
yeah,
over
we
by
like we've lately we've been spending a ton of time on the driver number.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no.
I didn't want to. I wanted everybody that's listening still and is going to listen, is watching, going to listen tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, whatever. To get to hear everything that Jesse said.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. By the way, before we get there, on the What You're Drinking segment, I submit to you that the Jameson Irish Whiskey Caskmates IPA edition, over a little bit of ice, is smoother than the Dirt Wolf Double IPA beer. I've probably obvious to everybody who's listened, been drinking both.
I wonder how much they complement each other because of all the hops.
It could be. That's a good point. And it's
you know
only
the whiskey's not
going to
have.
There,
it's not
so.
Like they dry hopped it. They
yeah,
just
yeah,
used
yeah.
a barrel.
Use the barrel. So anyway, if I can get through that's car
good,
number
though,
28,
isn't it?
Man, it's damn
yes,
good.
I taste the bitterness of the hops in there a little bit.
I'll need to clean the palate first because I keep going back and forth, and the double IPA will do it. Anyway, car number 28, dude, Davey Allison. 183 races,
God
19 wins.
God bless his soul.
Oh, my gosh. I think I've said it on the podcast before that I think my earliest memory of being a fan of somebody or being aware of NASCAR was I had some baseball cards. And I don't know how I came across, but I ended up with a Davey Allison
baseball card, racing card, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It was a baseball card style and stock and all
that. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, Davey Allison. All right, that's a cool name. I'm cool with it. And
it's
like,
a cool name.
And I think he had like a mullet at that time. And I mean, I'm real young.
Trash stash.
Yeah, the trash stash was fantastic. And I was like, that's my guy. And then you know, of course, what happened. And you're like, dadgummit, I can't believe it that, you know, my guy. But that was my first foray really into any sort of, you know, National Touring Series racing was Davey Allison. So I'm big fan there. And I think, because you got me that shirt for Darlington.
Oh, yeah.
For the throwback weekend. And you got me Davey Allison. I don't know if I had told you at that point that, like, Davey, he was my guy, you know, at age...
Oh, I didn't have a clue. That just happened organically.
So that was real cool. Fred Lorenzen, who we've talked about on the show before, 125 races, 25 wins. There you go, right?
Wow.
There, right?
One out of six.
One out of
five.
Well, five.
Excuse
yeah,
me.
One out of five right there. Why not? Ricky Rudd, 106 races, 3 wins. Ernie Irvin was in the 28 car with 92 races and 8 wins.
And God bless his soul, too.
No kidding.
He never was right after that crash.
Yeah.
And I think he'd tell you today he's still probably not totally right.
If it weren't if it weren't Cale Yarborough, I would be bored of saying Cale Yarborough's name. But Cale Yarborough, 9 wins in the 28 car. How can you get 9 wins over 67 races in the 28 car among all the cars that he raced? You know what I'm saying? Like, every week we have eight by Cale and 5 by Cale and 4 and 12 and...
Cale just never... So in a world in this NASCAR now where people that win don't tend to hop around that much,
mm-hmm.
Cale was a guy who won, who hopped around a lot. He was in everybody's car for 2 or 3 years.
Everything. You put me in a bicycle, he'll win.
And there must have been something about his bulldog mentality that just mm-hmm. did not line up with the way owners wanted things done, but... How can you argue with the 83 wins and 3 straight championships? And I mean, he left. So, yeah, I mean.
Here's a stat we need to look up. What car did he have the most wins in?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it was the Wood Brothers car, but we could look that up.
Yeah, yeah. We'll find out at some point. But because we keep getting, like I said, 9 and 10 and 12 and 4 and 2 and et cetera.
Right.
So. Anyway, Buddy Baker, 60 races, 5 wins. That's an easy math problem right there.
Oh, yeah, red car with a mirror face number, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, Bobby Allison, so continuing with the Allisons, 31 races, 5 wins. There's another, you know, 1 out of 6.
These guys all bounced around, even though they won tons of races. It's so weird.
And maybe this is before my time or before whatever. I don't remember Dale Jarrett racing in the 28.
So
but
he
31
left.
Races, so less than a season, and 1 win.
So when he left Joe Gibbs Racing, that mm-hmm. was the car he went to. He went to drive for Robert mm. Yates, but at the time, they only had the 1 car.
Okay.
And then, so they went to the second car, and Dale got in the 88, and Ernie Irvin got in the 28. And there may be some more... details in there that I'm not thinking of, but that's sort of the anthology of how it went.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, crazy. There you go. Our spotlight driver today, it was the first name that I didn't recognize, and it was the first name on the list in total number of races that didn't have a win in the 28, but Eddie Skinner, 68 races, no wins, 4 top fives. He was born in 1908 out of Yerington, Nevada. I'm going to look that up right now. Where on earth... is Yerington, Nevada. That can't be big.
Is that our first you know, the Nevadan first... racer other than the Busch brothers?
You know, that's a good question. It's funny. I just look up Yerington, Nevada, and like the first picture link was the classic one-horse town, no stoplight sort of race. Let's see what we have. Oh, way up. It's close to Reno.
Okay.
Close-ish to Reno.
I bet Wally knows where that's at.
In that area. So, yeah, Midwest Nevada there. So, there you go. That's where he's from. He was, like I said, born in 1908. His NASCAR debut was in 1953 at Martinsville. So, think about...
He's 45 years old.
Right? How crazy is that? 73 races over the next 6 years. So, you know, till he's 51. He raced from 45 to 51. You know, age. Nobody does that now. 17 top 10s.
No.
He was known as a prankster, dude. He once made a pit stop mid-race, and he pulled in and said, y'all need to slow this car down. Someone's going to get hurt. I mean, just...
Well, also, keep in mind, in 1953, people. NASCAR had only been a thing for like 6 years.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, just messing with it. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool, though.
He later competed in the U.S. Auto Club stock car events and passed away in March 1987. We'll hats off and drinks up and cheers to Mr. Eddie Skinner. Eddie, delicious. That's really cool. I love that. So, that brings us to Ask PTM a question from Dustin Hamby. At Dustin 2488 says Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, William Byron. Who gets her first win first? Who gets her first win first?
I edited his language a little bit to change it to that because I thought that would be funny to
okay
to trip you up over the first win first. I mean, just based on consistency and speed and being dialed in, I don't know how you could pick anything other than Chase Elliott. But Alex Bowman kind of, I don't know. Rookies don't win, and I don't think William Byron is Tony Stewart or Jimmy Johnson or Kyle Busch until he proves me different, and I'll happily retract that statement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here's the thing. For me, you look at, like, it feels like the talk shows that I watch. That sounded stupid. It sounds like the ESPN 2 on, like, a Tuesday at noon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever stupid show that they have on. And these analysts,
some bastardized version of First Take, which is a bad show,
and they're these analysts trying to make a name for themselves, right? And so they're gonna emphatically pick somebody who's not obvious.
Oh, and they probably drew names out of a hat,
right?
And just have to then make a case,
and then every once in a while one of them hits, and suddenly they get all this attention, and then they get to be the next Mike Tirico or whoever, you know. And
Skip Bayless.
Yeah, exactly. So do I want to be that person? No, I just made fun of him. Chase Elliott, obviously. I mean, come on.
There's no logical
He's knocked
decision.
On the door. There's no way that I could choose any of the others right now. And I'm happy to be proven wrong. And I would love to see all three or any one or whatever. I want to see. Here's the thing. Guarantee one of them wins next year. I'll put, Vegas odds and stuff has to be, you almost got to pay them to get odds.
Oh, them versus, yeah.
Versus the field for all season?
Oh, yeah, that's way under.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's like a, 5-1 or 1-5 or something.
That's
like
a plus 650.
Exactly.
You're only reaping like 35 cents on a $1 bet.
Exactly. So one of them wins? Absolutely. Which one? I mean, if you don't say Chase Elliott, what do you, then you're trying to be one of the ESPN2 at noon guy. You know what, Sherwin? I would love to be on ESPN2 at noon. But
with the PETM Racing podcast?
Yes, absolutely. But
well, at least we stayed clean enough. We could probably work our way through that.
Well, you'd have a bleep person. They got the...
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, they
5
got,
seconds.
Yeah. They got the bleep people. They'll figure it out. Yeah.
Hey, can you hit drop on that?
Yeah. Hey, Bristol, Connecticut. We're here. Let's do this.
All right. So there's one that didn't get in the notes I sent you.
Okay.
Because I've been having some kind of weird trouble with my deal here. But
A-hole.
This is from NASCAR Nerd at _ NASCAR Nerd. Mark, we know that's you. If you were tasked with designing the paint scheme for a 2018 Cup car, whose car would you want to design and what would it look like?
Ooh, so the question is, do I go for awesome looking or do I go for like trolley? like you remember what was it? It was what did Kyle Busch have to wear that one time that had like the hearts and the unicorns and crap on it? You remember?
Oh,
that?
They let the kids design an M&M's car.
Yeah.
It had unicorns and bunnies and junk. And it was like powder pink.
Yes. So do I go that route? You know what? That's really funny. The Dogecoin car, you remember? That thing was fantastic. I love that. Was DiBenedetto, wasn't it? Or who was that?
No, that was Josh Wise.
Josh Wise, you're right. Yep, Josh Wise. And those are the kind of trolley but fun stuff. Or do I go for something that looks really badass? Now, for somebody like me, I'm going for trolley, I think,
That's funny.
Yeah. I got to go rainbows and unicorns and glitter and stuff.
So whose car?
Give me one second. So, you got to think of somebody who normally you wouldn't think would be up for that type of thing. Kurt Busch is a good candidate.
Strong to very strong.
Yeah, right. So we'll go with Kurt Busch for the rainbows and unicorn car.
Rainbows and unicorns. Okay. All right. So I thought about this a little bit more on the serious vein, which is good that you went that way so that I can go this way and we're not copycatting or sticking too close to the line or whatever. So what I thought about is I love like mixed blues and blacks on a car, like some sort of fade from a really bright medium blue, kind of like what we see with the Petty blue right there. And then, but there's got to be black on the car too, but lightning bolts. I remember Jeff Burton drove a car, I think it was when Prilosec first started sponsoring this car that had lightning bolts on it.
Okay.
So, and they were like multicolored, like shaded lightning bolts. So I need like lightning bolts, and I need this to be on Bubba Wallace's car.
Ooh.
Hence the preface with the Petty. But it's got to be like a drum company because he loves playing like hard rock drums. Like, so there's got to be some kind of like drum company that wants to be on the car. And there's like blues and blacks and lightning bolts. And it just looks angry as cuss words. And that's probably what he's yelling on the microphone when he's beating on those drums anyway. So that's what that's where I was at with
it. I love it. I love it. Yeah, perfect. I mean, that sounds, like you said, loud and badass. You got Ludwig drums or somebody wacko on there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking like one of those electronic ones that so you could tie in the lightning bolts.
Yeah, 80s style too. I'm digging it. All right, dude. It's been an hour and 10 minutes. These people are probably tired of it.
They're like, what the hell is
And here's the thing, me and Sherwin are gonna sit here and talk NASCAR for another hour after this.
Probably
because we're having fun. So what can I say other than let's close this thing out, Sherwin.
We got some
what do we have?
We do.
I can't bring up you know. We got to do that. So,
and it's funny.
Stranger Stang, what's the appropriate response to someone that snatches your candy out of your hand on its way to your mouth and they effing shove it all the way in their mouth before you can get it back? So somebody done stole your candy. And
so I have a policy on this.
Okay.
I don't take somebody else's candy.
Well, there's
because I'm afraid of how I would react if somebody took mine.
Like you're holding a piece of candy.
Like you're
and
about
just
like maybe you have like a handful
it.
Of M&Ms.
Who does this?
And someone and like you're going like this, and somebody just goes whop, and then just
snatches it and throws it in their mouth. I hope I've got
I think
more.
You, like that's an asshole
left.
Level 11.
This sounds like this happened to her, and now she's trying to
recently,
and she's trying to justify.
I think one of her jerk kids did this to her.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, and she like trying to justify her possible overreaction to it.
Possible.
And her most definite. Her definite overreaction to it. And Ashley, here's what I got to say: there is no overreaction to this situation. Like
right, and the
you
older
don't freaking
the,
steal it from somebody and shove it in your mouth. That's
and if it was
horse
an
manure.
Adult, I mean, open handed slap while they're chewing to really get the point across,
or backhanded from the hip or something. I mean,
upper deck.
Oh, yeah.
Just get the, make them bite their tongue a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Any reaction is an appropriate reaction, non-lethal. And in some cases, you know, we'll you know, maybe the jury would side with you on the lethal part, but any non-lethal
reaction what if this was the best piece of candy that there was on Earth and there was only one of them?
Right, I mean, like an everlasting gobstopper and something. And
or something.
Somebody just
one of those
freaking
crazy, weird movies we saw when we were kids. Like, there's only one. Like, you only made the one.
Right.
But it was like the magic chocolate bar from The Princess Bride.
Okay.
That's supposed to give.
Is there any Iocane powder in this?
You know what I mean?
Eat it anyway. All right. Ashley, well, thank you for the question as always.
Thankfully, the first 30 minutes were pretty serious.
Holy crap. Thank you, Jesse, for joining us. I mean, the first 30 minutes of this thing, we actually had a real podcast.
Well, there was an adult on the podcast.
There was an adult. As soon as the adults left, now he's younger than us, but right. He was the adult.
Right.
So what can I say? Y'all know where to find us. PETMPodcast.com, at PETMPodcast on Twitter and on the Instagram and everything else. We're having fun, y'all. It's the off season. We just come here, we hang out, we drink some beer, we drink some liquor, and have ourselves a good old time. Y'all join us. Keep coming on, keep hanging out. I think the folks on YouTube, they're having the most fun on here, just interacting, and we'll answer the questions and stuff. But anyway, we'll definitely catch y'all next week. We're gonna have a blast. Hey, happy birthday to my wife who just got on a plane. Matter of fact, I just got a text from her.
Esteemed producer, the Frizz.
The Frizz 11. She has just landed in Orlando. She's going to...
That's crazy because we started before she took off.
We started the podcast when she took off. We have ended the podcast when she landed. She is in Orlando to go to Disney on her birthday. So, there it is. Happy birthday to her. And, y'all know where to find us and everything, and we'll talk to y'all next week. Sherwin.
I'm Andrew Sherwin at Pregame Engineer. This was way more episode than I ever thought it would be. But yeah, definitely hit us up on the social media. Instagram is the same as the podcast. You can email us. That's easy to figure out too. PETM at PETMPodcast.com. And this weekend's going to be fun, right? Got the bachelorette thing going.
Yeah, we're bacheloring it out with Serena gone. Hey, when the cats are away, us mice, we going to play.
We're going to have to buy more Jim Beam.
Yeah. We'll talk to y'all next week as soon as we recover. Woo! Drink.